The little girl with the mechanical arm reached for the brightly wrapped package that was almost as big as she was. Then she paused and looked up at me. "It's all right, Hope," I said gently. "It's for you. Merry Christmas."
That was the beginning of the whole thing. I suddenly saw my way clear, and I determined to commit not one murder, but murder on a grand scale.
The church was pressed in on either side by two warehouse buildings, and most of the graveyard was ancient and no longer in use. Old stones leaned this way and that, monuments and tombs were greened and yellowed over with moss and lichen.
There were widows and orphans, but why wasn't there a word for a parent who lost a child? Because it was too awful to contemplate, too terrible to give a name. The thought buzzed in Ellie's brain, just as it had every day for the last few months, as she stood on the shore at the Binks, a rocky wart sticking out into the Firth of Forth.
Tuesday morning started out damn near perfect. Right up until DeMarco Jones told James Beck Manny wants to kill somebody. DeMarco hadn't told Beck right away. He'd been waiting for the right moment, as if there were right moments for that sort of news.
All day long, lying on the sofa in the sitting room of her parents' London mansion flat, Beth hears the clunk of the elevator doors opening and closing. Sometimes she hears voices on the landing, people arriving or departing, and then the long sigh of the elevator descending.
The door opens and Dad comes out. He is a handsome man in his early 40s, wearing a suit and holding a scuba diving mask. He jumps as he sees the camera.
Audrey, what are you doing here?
I'm filming, you know, for my project.
Right, of course. Sweetheart, Audrey's filming.
Mum appears at the door, dressed in a skirt and bra. She claps her hands over her top half and shrieks when she sees the camera.
That's what I meant when I said Audrey's filming.
Hello, darling, the voice from the telephone said. This is Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Simon Templar, his face freshly shaven, dark hair newly brushed, his clean shirt half-buttoned, was not expecting a call from Zsa Zsa Gabor. He did not know Zsa Zsa Gabor, and he had no reason to believe that the actress with the often-mimicked voice was any better acquainted with him.
During my first year of university, my friends and I became partially nocturnal. We'd stay up late for the 9 a.m. lectures. We'd get up early for the 9 p.m. parties. The rest of our waking hours were, as with so many students, given over to lounging in reeking halls, eating cheap pizza, and playing video games.
The Home Office telegraphy department always smelled of tea. The source was one packet of Lipton's at the back of Nathaniel Steepleton's desk drawer. Before the widespread use of the electric telegraph, the office had been a broom cupboard. Faniel had heard more than once that its failure to expand was a sign of the Home Secretary's continuing mistrust of naval inventions. But even if that wasn't the case, the departmental budget had never stretched to the replacement of the original carpet, which liked to keep the ghosts of old smells.
Of everything that disappeared, Kinder eggs are what I missed most. When the walls closed in on Gaza and adult conversations became hotter and sadder, I measured the severity of our siege by the dwindling number of those delicate chocolate eggs wrapped in thin, colorful foil, with splendid toy surprises incubating inside the eggs on store shelves.
In February 1755, two British ships made landfall off the Hampton Roads, Virginia. On board were the first regular British troops to arrive in the American colonies for over 50 years. These British soldiers, numbering more than 1,000 men, formed the core of the command of General Edward Braddock, newly created Commander-in-Chief of the British colonies in North America.
Titus Lambert had never been fond of Christmas. When John Deadman, the Minister for War Organisation of Industry, announced that Christmas 1943 was to be as good as cancelled, Titus couldn't share his wife Maud's disappointment. They had sharply differing reactions, therefore, to the sound of the telephone ringing at 6 p.m. on Christmas Eve. Maud took the call and knew immediately that her evening was about to be ruined.
I am Polly Flint. I came to live at the Yellow House when I was 6 years old. I stood on the steps in the wind and the swirls of sand, and my father pulled the brass bell knob beside the huge front door. Together we listened to the distant jangle and to footsteps padding nearer. My father did a little dance on his short legs and whistled.
In the upstairs part of the bunker, Traudeljunga chatted with the Goebbels children as they ate their lunch. After waiting 10 minutes or so, still without a sound from Hitler's room, Linger took the initiative. He took Bormann with him and cautiously opened the door. In the cramped studio, Hitler and Eva Braun sat alongside each other on the small sofa. Eva Braun was slumped to Hitler's left. A strong whiff of bitter almonds, the distinctive smell of prussic acid, drifted up from her body. Hitler's head drooped lifelessly. Blood dripped from a bullet hole in his right temple,